Tell the truth.
Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is your platform for free speech, because that's what we do here. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the donate button and send the badly needed fundage. Okay, today's Monday. This is the day we have Mark Collett on the show. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, it's good to be here, my friend. The perfect start to the week.
Okay, well, let's get started. Let's get right on into it then. So, I've been thinking lately about why is it that our government sucks so bad, right? And I guess every society everywhere on Earth throughout history has to be dominated by some sort of elite. But, like, you know, in our countries, the elites that dominate society really, really seem to dislike the bulk of the people that they are ruling over. And maybe this is fairly common throughout history. I don't know if it has to be. And I was just thinking of Japan, which is dominated, the Japanese elite really doesn't seem to dislike the Japanese people. They seem to be part of the Japanese people, and they do better for them. Not that they're perfect. Maybe you could say, I don't know enough about China. The Chinese government's doing well, reasonably well for the Chinese people over the past 40 years. What does that mean? The Putin governments in Russia, over the past 24 years, I would say have made things better for people. What do you make of this? Our governments in UK and the US are not just the government. I don't mean the governments. I mean the elite. I'm really talking about the elites here, which isn't necessarily the same thing as the governments. I always talk about the Jewish domination of our elite. But how do you get an elite? How do you even get an elite that is going to genuinely care about the people it rules over, Mark? What do you think?
I think it's a very difficult question, and I'll tell you why it's a very difficult question. Because people want me to say something that's quite simple. People want me to say our leaders should have our interests at heart. Now, that is true, but people are, to a degree, selfish. People are, to a degree, creatures that will always put self-interest above the group. And that is unfortunately why politics is so very open to corruption. Because if you are representing a group of people whose interests should be at the forefront of your mind, of your actions, and you should be working with to help and to represent. And another individual comes to you and says, well, look, these people won't agree with this, but I want it doing. Here's £50,000, or here's a new car, or there's these three beautiful women here, and you can take your pick and go and do what you want with one of them for an evening. And all these things have happened in politics. People can have their heads turned for self-interest. And there will always be some degree of conflict between elected officials and the public when it comes to self-interest. And also, when people are elected, they themselves do have their own opinions. So I may be elected to represent a group of people, but I might feel very strongly about a certain issue. And I might say, well, the people want something, but I feel uncomfortable about that something. Or I want what they want to a degree, but I have certain caveats in my mind. And because of that, people aren't always going to act in accordance with the quote-unquote interests of a group. And I think that's why there needs to be major oversight, checks and balances, and what I call direct democracy to ensure bad decisions aren't made. Okay? Now, when it comes down to it, what we're seeing here isn't just a little bit of corruption. What we're seeing here goes a lot further than a man saying, well, the locals don't want the old oak tree cut down, but this guy who wants to build a factory and he needs the gate where the old oak tree's going is going to pay me £50,000. And fundamentally, I don't care about the old oak tree, so I'm cutting it down and taking the 50 grand. Now, that's bad enough. And as somebody who loves nature, if I found out one of my politicians had taken a bribe to cut down some beautiful 500-year-old oak tree for a bung so some dirty great factory could violate the countryside, I would be fuming. But what we're talking about here is our politicians in the pay of people who want us absolutely destroyed. And as bad as cutting down a beautiful old oak tree is, it's not as bad as wanting our entire race wiped out or bringing about white genocide, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the issue. The issue here isn't the age-old issue of an elected official being slightly self-interested or slightly greedy. It's basically entire rafts of elected officials acting in absolute diametrical ways to the interests of the people who elected them, and doing so on such a widespread scale that the people and their elected representatives are actually completely at odds. And I am always one for being reasonable. I'm always one for understanding that there is that playoff between self-interest and, the good of the people. And that's why I understand that elected politicians are paid a lot of money. They are given a good deal. They are looked after. And it is an attempt to reduce selfish behavior, because if the government are paying you, £80,000-£90,000 a year plus expenses and a second home in London to be a sitting member of parliament, that should be and then a very, very good pension and probably jobs for your friends who you can hire as office staff and assistants. That's meant to be compensation enough for you not to start looking elsewhere for bungs. You're meant to be comfortable enough that you don't need to be greedy. So I understand why these people are often paid well. But this isn't just a matter of a little bit of self-interest or making the odd bad decision. We have seen the wholesale capture of our elected elite. And fundamentally, that now is leading to our destruction. And earlier on, I want to clarify something. When I say the best way is direct democracy, there should be some things that elected officials decide upon via consensus when representing their constituents. But there are other things that are such large nation-changing decisions that every single member of the population should be allowed to vote in a referendum on those things. So, for example, with something like mass immigration, with something like membership of the European Union, with something like the potential abolition of a currency or the establishment of a new currency when the UK was being floated about going into the euro and getting rid of the pound, there has to be a national debate, an informed national debate, and people have to make a decision. And the reason I say that is twofold. Firstly, that eliminates corruption. You're not having a very small pool of people who could all be bribed make the decision and all go wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we're going to make this decision and make it look like there was oversight. But also, fundamentally, it avoids party politics. So if the Democrats take a line on something and the Republicans take a line on something, what will happen is some people will take whatever line the Democrats take, whether they agree with it or not, because they would never vote Republican. And equally, some people will defend any line that the Republicans take because they would never, ever in a million years vote Democrat. And that leads to partisan ways of voting or partisan politics, which is destructive to people because they take a side, then agree with whatever that side does. And that's why direct referenda are much better ways at solving big national issues. So, yes, I think I do understand human nature. I'm not somebody who is such an idealist as to believe everyone's always going to act in good faith or in the right way. But fundamentally, and this is the key, fundamentally, I believe you can structure a political system in order to give more choice to the people, more say on big issues to the people, and to have sufficient oversight to prevent politicians being bought. We have never had that kind of oversight. And if you don't have oversight, what ends up happening is over time, you will get to a position, over time, you will get to a position where your entire political system is bought. And that's where we are now. Because once it starts happening and a stop isn't put to it, it's like woodworm. Once it's set in and you don't treat that wood, the woodworm ends up in every beam and every rafter and every board in the entire house. And then you've got an issue where the entire house needs burning down and you need to start again. And we're rapidly approaching that point because, unfortunately, there hasn't been that oversight. And I'm talking about a direct referendum being used to solve a number of different issues, or a series of referenda being used to solve a number of issues. But we are now so far away from that, and more power has been ceded to politicians, and they've become more self-interested and more bought and more paid for, that I would say the average person on the street has less power, less say, less agency, and a lower ability to ever voice their opinion. It's never been this bad. People are more disconnected from their politicians than ever before. And those politicians, as I said, are more entrenched and bought off. And before you give you a reply, I'm going to give you a small example. A few weeks ago, two leading Conservative Party ministers, or former ministers, not MPs, but actual ministers, people who had been on the front bench and held ministerial positions, were contacted by journalists posing as a South Korean company. And they said to these members of parliament, "We'd like you to work for us. What's your day rate? What's your minimum day rate? And what do you think?" Those Conservative Party, those former ministers came back and said, they said £10,000 a week, a month. What do you think, Patrick? A week, a month?
A day?
A day. Oh, you beat me. But yeah, it was a day. To work for this South Korean company, these former ministers, these members of parliament, these people who are already phenomenally wealthy, were calling in at a rate of £10,000 a day. So if they'd have just done 3 days a week for that company in a 4-week calendar month, they'd have been coming away with £12,000 a month, which for many people would be half an annual wage, or it would be a wage for a mum who works part-time. And that would be in a month. And that tells you, and they'd only be doing part-time, they'd only be doing it 3 days a week. So for them to work, you know, part-time for this South Korean company, in a month they would take away as much as a part-time worker works in a year, or half the wage a part-time worker, a full-time worker, achieves in a year, which is scandalous. And it tells you something that is very, very illustrative of this problem. we are not at the point where MPs are just taking the odd bung, or where taking the odd bung or being a little bit greedy every now and again or keeping a bit on the side is something that happens occasionally, but it's turned a blind eye to because, well, people are always a little bit self-interested. This self-interest, this acting as a gun for hire when being an elected politician, is so embedded in the political system that people at the very top of the tree will openly go on webcam calls and allow themselves to be recorded, coming up independently with exactly the same figure for a day's wages, which is so much money, it's unbelievable. Sorry, I don't know even what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about. Sorry, £10,000 a day for 3 days for a month. My figures are totally wrong. We're talking £120,000 per month for a part-time job, which is 10 times a yearly part-time wage and 5 times a full-time wage for a lot of people in a month for working part-time. These people are disgusting, and this tells you everything you need to know about our system. And sorry for getting the maths wrong. I don't know. I must not have had enough Red Bull this morning.
All right. Well, okay. So, you know, you mentioned democracy, and Winston Churchill, your famous former prime minister, who was very quotable, by the way, once said that democracy is the worst form of government except for every other form of government that's ever been tried. He said something along those lines. And I'm not even sure if he was right. You look at the countries that have at least a history of democracy. When I was in high school, back in the 70s, we had a textbook and there was a map of the world, and it showed the democracy countries, the countries that at the time had elected governments. And you're talking about Western Europe, and the North America, Australia, New Zealand, and Japan. Japan was kind of the outlier there. And if you were to look, I remember in another class, we had a poster on the wall that had the richest countries in green, and then the next layer in lime green, and then I guess there were some in yellow, and then orange and red. You know, the Africa was mostly red. And the dark green countries and the lime green countries were pretty similar. It was a pretty similar mix of countries to the ones that were the democracy countries. And then, of course, if you were to look at it racially, with, you know, the exception of Japan, the white countries would have been, a lot of the white countries were communists, so they weren't in the democracy camp back then, but they tended to be the wealthy ones. So I'm bringing that up, but if you look at the countries that are democracies now, in the 80s, you did get a lot of non-European, non-white countries and non-rich countries that became so-called democracy countries. The Philippines, a lot of Latin America, a lot of countries started adopting this. But here's the thing. So if you look at the countries that are committing suicide by mass immigration, all of them are democracy countries, and especially the ones that were democracy countries 50 years ago or 40 years ago when I was in high school.
You've got the magic touch. Ooh. It makes me glow so much. It casts a spell. It rings a bell. The magic touch. Oh, when I feel your charm, it's like a four-alarm. You make me thrill so much. You've got the magic touch. Here I go reeling. I'm feeling
consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Right on out of my arms. Still I feel a thrill of your wonderful charms. Lips that once were in my dreams, and I'll see you in my dreams.
Mass immigration. All of them are democracy countries, and especially the ones that were democracy countries 50 years ago or 40 years ago when I was in high school. So democracy doesn't seem to be now, of course, you were talking about direct voting, and, you know, you had the experience, 7 years ago with Brexit, 7 years ago, yeah, I guess it was, with Brexit, which was an exercise in this kind of direct democracy. But the country best known for direct democracy is Switzerland, and Switzerland's been undergoing, the mass immigration probably longer than any other country in Europe. So is there a link between our democracy systems and suicidal mass immigration, for instance? It doesn't seem to be any bulwark against it. Is it because Winston Churchill was wrong about every other government, every other form of government being worse than democracy? Or is it really the worst form of government?
I'm going to got a really, well, you could call it interesting, or you could call it strange take on this. I think if you give people the illusion of choice, they are less likely to rebel. So if you put a man in a cottage and you surround that with a big wall and you tell him, well, actually, you know, you're free to leave whenever you want, even if he's not free to leave, say you leave whenever you want, he'll feel a lot more comfortable than if you said, well, actually, there's a big wall surrounding the grounds of the cottage and you're never leaving. The illusion of having power and agency in your life is often enough to completely placate someone. So someone would feel awful being told they were caged, that they were under house arrest. So if you said to somebody, you're going into this cottage and you can't leave the cottage or its grounds, people would feel instantly claustrophobic, trapped, as if they'd been penned in. They'd be looking for ways out. They wouldn't be able to sleep at night. Stress would eat them up. That's absolutely 100% true and correct. However, even if you were holding them there against their will, but said, look, there's a gate over there, and yeah, there's two guards on it, but if you asked politely, you'd be allowed to leave. Most people would instantly feel, oh, well, that's good. Well, what are the guards there for? They're there for your own protection, mate, to stop bad people coming in. Oh, okay. Now, the odd person might go up to the gate and try to leave, but many, once there'd been a couple of reassurances, would be happy. They'd be happy roaming the grounds, going to the cottage, making phone calls, cooking themselves tea. And as long as they had enough bread and circuses, as long as their internet was connected, as long as they had a few computer games to play and the TV worked so they could watch the sports ball, you know, the local supermarket delivered some beer and cheese and bread, and they could call the takeaway, they would absolutely stay in their little pen. And the illusion of being able to leave and being free would be enough to keep them happy. And I think what you have with democracy, especially the democratic governments we see, I say democratic in inverted commas, because there are better forms of democracy like direct referendums, etc. What you get with these direct forms of referendums would be people actually having a say in their life. But what they have now is the illusion they have a say. And because they have the illusion of choice, they're far more likely to be good little citizens. They're far less likely to rebel. And I think that's the problem. I think people, like with my analogy of being, you know, under house arrest in the cottage, people are basically under house arrest by their politicians. They are being, you know, held against their will. They're not having any say, but they have the illusion of freedom. They have the illusion of choice. They have the illusion that they can, you know, vote for one of the two parties and things will change. And this illusion of choice, coupled with the bread and circuses that keep them happy and keep them focused on other things, have placated Western populations since World War II, arguably before.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Understand the magic that you do. You're my dream come true, my one and only you. Only you can make all this change in me.
Them happy and keep them focused on other things have placated Western populations since World War II, arguably before World War II. And because the population is placated and because they believe they have choice, they are then more open to being abused because they are in some way convinced that they chose this path and they are in some way convinced they can vote their way out of this path and change direction. They are convinced that they control their own destiny when they absolutely don't. And at the same time, they are distracted by frivolities. That's, I think, a powerful, a powerful way of controlling populations, distracting them and giving them the illusion of choice.
I think those are very good points, that we are distracted.
Do you want another point? Do you want another point?
Sure, one more.
I'll give you another point. I was speaking to a friend of mine the other day, not seen him for a while, and it was his birthday, and we went out and we were having a drink. And over the last few years, both of us have become fathers. And we were talking about the trials and tribulations of being parents. And I said, some nights, getting my daughter up those stairs to bed is like, it's a Herculean task. It's a battle. It's a war. I don't want to go up yet. No, it's not my bedtime yet. And you're battling. And my friend said something to me that really hit home. He said he gives his daughter two choices at the stairs. Right, are you walking up or am I carrying you? So his daughter is given a choice. It's bedtime. Are you walking up or am I carrying you? And because she has a choice, she thinks she's in control of the situation, and that placates her instantly. However, whichever decision she makes, whether it's being carried up or walking up, the eventuality at the end is she is upstairs and in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, seemed genius. It was something that I hadn't actually considered. So now I'm going to be giving my daughter a choice. Come on, it's your choice. Are you walking up or are you being carried up? Because I know that at the end, I get what I want, which will be my daughter settled in bed, going to sleep. So, you know, we can get the bedtime routine well underway. It's bedtime story. And then daddy and mummy can sit and have an hour or so together, which is what you want as an adult. And I kind of looked at that and I thought, yeah, that works with children. But I think it also works with the public.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of what you've got with a democratic system. Do you vote Republican or Democrat? Do you vote Conservative or Labour? Are you being carried up the stairs or are you walking up the stairs? Well, whichever one of those parties you vote for, you're still ending up in the same place. Just like whichever choice the child makes, she's still upstairs being put to bed. And we as a people are now in that position. Well, which do you want? Do you want mass immigration and white genocide via the Labour Party? Or do you want mass immigration and white genocide via the Conservative Party? Oh, I'm a Conservative. That's the one I'm picking. I've got agency and I got to make a choice. I'm a free human being that decides the outcome of politics in my nation. No, you didn't. You got fooled, just like a child being taken to bed.
We're not racist. We don't mind mass immigration as long as it's done legally. Hey, did you ever see, I know I've asked you this before, but Yes Minister or Yes Prime Minister, the BBC sitcom?
I am aware of it and I have seen bits of it, but it's not something I have watched enough to be able to pass any opinion on or particularly remember any of it.
Okay. They had, it tended to be tensions between a minister who then partway through the series becomes prime minister and a bureaucrat who was the head of his the ministry that this politician was supposed to control. And then once he became prime minister, he was the Sir Humphreys was the head of basically the whole civil service for Britain. And usually the civil service was getting their way. And sometimes they were talking about the types of things you were talking about just now. This Sir Humphreys, the head of the civil service, and one of his lieutenants were discussing how to get the prime minister to go along with something that was it a new head of the Church of England, but something that he had different ideas about. And, you know, the They said, well, Sir Humphrey said, well, you just present him with a choice, but just make sure that the only viable choice is the one that we want. And so there was that type of thing. But, you know, you have elected politicians, but how to what extent do the elected politicians really make decisions? And, you know, in Yes Minister or Yes Prime Minister, it emphasized the role of this permanent bureaucracy, and that is one power source. And the permanent bureaucracy, they're not elected. These are careers. They enter the career, in some countries at least, through a civil service examination, and they're important. And then, of course, you have political donors, and you were making reference to them. They effectively can buy and sell the politicians. But then, of course, you also have you have a lot of power that doesn't even have to go through the politicians. And so, Mark, you're well known for your annual review of Christmas adverts. So you have this massive indoctrination of the public. You know, one of the means of it is through an advertising industry. You've got a media, you've got academia. These are all important in forming the ideas of the public that don't go through the media, don't go through elected politicians. So there's a lot, even in democracy countries, there's a lot that isn't really settled through the results of elections, but, you know, bureaucracy or outside forces, corporate forces. There's a lot that's out there. And certainly, and so when I was at the beginning of this, when I was posing the question, I specifically said we have, all societies are ruled by an elite. We have an elite, which isn't just the government. And our entire elite, I mean, in our countries, really seems to be against us. And so it goes beyond elections. Is there anything that can be done about, say, the non-elected elite? We have these systems, and our elites seem to be out to get us, at least in these countries.
Well, I need to respond to something you said there, because it's very important. And what you've said is actually something that I have seen firsthand, because I'm not being boastful, but I probably spent more time working towards local politics and getting people elected at a local level than most people active in the nationalist movement today. So let me explain something. When I was active heavily in local politics, I remember at different points saying to people, look, when we get elected, we're going to have a say. We're going to have somebody on that council who is going to advocate for you. And that, to a degree, was true. But it was also, to a degree, absolute naivety. Absolute rank naivety. And you might be thinking, why? Well, when we won a particular council seat, I remember our people being over the moon and me being over the moon. And I remember there being celebrations. I remember people being, wow, we have done it. And we thought this was this watershed, which it was. It was a council that the BNP now had representation on. That can never be taken away. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing that we won that election. And I'm certainly not saying it's a bad thing that we get involved in local elections. I think all of those things are good. Okay. However, and this is a huge however, when that councillor took his seat, he came back to us and said, the entire bureaucracy of this council, it's the entire mechanism by which the council actually works and runs, is crooked. It's absolutely crooked. He said it's been built by the establishment parties. It's in the pay of the establishment parties. It works towards helping the establishment politicians achieve their ends, but no one's really willing to work with me because I'm a BNP councillor who is outside of the mainstream. And at that point, we realised we were up against something far greater than just the electoral machine and the mainstream media. And this isn't some, as you said earlier, like bureaucratic elite. It is people who work at every level of council bureaucracy that have been put in their places, really almost like political sleeper cells, to ensure that the councils work towards a quote-unquote progressive agenda, and to ensure that if by luck anyone does get elected to said councils who isn't part of the progressive agenda, the people who are not part of the progressive agenda will basically be largely locked out from ever being able to create change because they are met with resistance at every level. There is resistance at every level of the council. So at every level of the council, there is a roadblock for an outsider who gets elected. And at that point, you can see that it's not just an illusion of democracy that you're up against. It's not just the mainstream media. It's an entire system that has been captured by people who are anti-white, who are progressive, quote unquote, and who have a political slant, which means they will prevent normal people from getting into that council and pursuing a different agenda. And at that point, you realize that fundamentally, when people say it's an anti-white system, they mean it. That's not hyperbole. It's not that just there's a couple of anti-white. And Trump found this. We saw this with, I'm probably teaching my grandma to suck eggs at the moment, because we saw this with President Trump. President Trump gets elected, or Donald Trump gets elected, becomes president. And what's the next thing that happens? Well, the next thing that happens with President Trump is he can't actually make any changes. He can't actually alter anything. He can't actually bring about the things that he was elected to bring about. Why not? Because if he does try to bring about such changes, if he does try to do those things, there is always somebody at every single level of the bureaucracy in the White House and, you know, the presidential team that has been shaped and left there and grown and been molded for generations that is actually there to prevent Donald Trump doing the things he wanted. So at that point, and we made the woodworm analogy earlier, I'm not actually sure whether we're past the point of replacing a few panels. I'm not actually sure whether we're past the point of fixing things in that way. You know, it's a very, very difficult issue.
It is. So, you know, we have limited time left, but I do want to ask you, if you look around the world even, we've got all this development of technology. Science and technology has been developing like crazy for a couple of centuries, and certainly during our lifetime, just going skyrocketing. And this technology, on the one hand, allows regular people to live in certain ways, in, you know, lives that even kings in previous ages couldn't imagine. But on the other hand, there's the potential for technology just to surveil us all the time and to, the technology can really, really be used to repress us. So with that future, with a future that potentially could either be extremely, you know, affluent and wonderful for people, or it could be nightmarish. You look around, do you see any reason, like, do you see any examples of a way forward, whether it's governments or societal structures that are already in place in other countries, or movements that are afoot? Do you see any examples of hope?
They asked me how I knew my true love was true.
Subscribe to the Freedom Times monthly newspaper, published since 1985. That's right, 1985. The Freedom Times pulls no punches and observes no sacred cows or taboos. The perilous times we live in are too critical for anything but honest discussion of America's plight. The Freedom Times is the antidote to the lies and distortions of the fake news media. There's no better way to inform and enlighten Americans than by reading the Freedom Times each month. New subscribers may sign up at the special rate of just $29 for 1 year or $55 for 2 years. Subscribe online by going to AmericanFreedomNews.us or mail your subscription to The Freedom Times, P.O. Box 218, Wildwood, Pennsylvania, 15091. That's The Freedom Times, P.O. Box 218, Wildwood, Pennsylvania, 15091. Support America's best patriotic newspaper and one of the very few left by becoming a subscriber to The Freedom Times today.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up, with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQRS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What? Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, I don't.
How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Each day I pray for evening just to be with you. Together, at last, at twilight time. In the afterglow of day, we keep our rendezvous beneath the blue. Yeah. In the sweet and simple way, I fall in love again. Lighting the spark of love that fills me with dreams untold. Each day I pray for evening just to be with you. together at last at twilight time. Together at last at twilight time.
That are already in place in other countries or movements that are afoot. Do you see any examples of hope?
I do, but I see the examples of hope to be multifaceted approaches to politics. So they aren't just attempts to create political parties, but they're attempts to create community-wide movements that will advocate for people on a variety, advocate for our people on a variety of levels. Okay. And that means that people aren't just trying to get elected. They're trying to get into, you know, local positions where they could influence things like schooling or law enforcement. They're trying to set up homeschooling groups. They're trying to set up pro-white initiatives. They're advocating for our people legally, as a legal entity. All of those things are very important, and they divorce us from simply trying to enter a system that is so against us. Because instead of simply trying to enter a system that's against us and being a lone voice in a sea of anti-whiteness, we actually create our own systems. We create our own society, and that's important.
All right. Hey, we only have a couple more minutes. What was your last video on?
My last video was on extremism and extremists, and it's about the issue of the FBI changing the definition of what an extremist is. And there's been a concerted effort over the last few decades and a massive increase in the use of the term extremist over the last 100 years, which coincides with extremist being used as a pejorative term to specifically describe white people who stand up for traditionalism, morality, and the interests of whites.
Okay, that sounds like us. Barry Goldwater in 1964 once famously said something about moderation in the face of, what was it? In the face of peril is no virtue, and extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. So I'm not, something along those lines. I guess we're the extremists, we're the bad people. But I think our time for today is up. I want to thank you, Mark, for joining me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's been a brilliant show, and I always enjoy starting my week with you, even if I get a little bit of my maths wrong at the beginning of the show.
No problem, and I'll be back again next time with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.